Hello, and welcome back to the Cupboard Under the Stairs.
Hello.
It's been about 10 or 11 months since we last recorded.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
But
I promise we're much more motivated than we appear.
We really are. We talk about it constantly, and yet, actually, getting to the point where we record has been a struggle. So,
well, it doesn't help that we live, you know, not in the same city or county.
Yeah.
So actually being together in the same place in the same time doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
As much as we would even like just socially. So, yeah.
Exactly.
So we apologize for the absence, but
we are back.
Woo!
And with a vengeance, I think. I think this is going to be a really good episode. So, but first, you know, we wanted to say that, so even though we haven't been recording, we've actually been listening to quite a few other Harry Potter podcasts. Myself especially, I can think of at least three or four that I've listened to. Five.
Clearly you're winning in that category right now.
I've been listening to MuggleCast for a long time. That was my, you know, my OG Harry Potter podcast.
Yep.
But since then, I have listened to all of Witch Please, which I highly recommend.
Very good.
Super love it. And I've been listening to Potterless, which is also pretty great. I enjoy it. I don't know if I told you about that one, but it's a guy in his late 20s that hadn't yet read the Harry Potter books, and so he'd only seen like 2.5 of the movies.
What?
So, I know. Craziness. So,
well, big props to him.
I know. He's making a podcast out of reading the books for the first time.
Way to catch up, dude.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous.
Join us.
Yes.
We're perfectly normal people.
Exactly.
And not at all obsessed.
And, I've been listening to
our favorite.
Our favorite, and yes, one we've been talking about a lot lately, Potterotica, which is amazing.
Woo!
It is Harry Potter erotic fiction, fan fiction. Amazing.
Potterotica sustained me during my finals week at work, grading so many things. And my husband, always ever concerned for my well-being during this time, you know, would text me to see how I was doing, and I told him I was just fine. And he rolled his eyes, as he often does.
Absolutely.
But yes, thank you, Potterotica friends, for giving me the will to live.
Seriously,
during a very difficult time.
Seriously, I will absolutely concur. I've had a rough few months here myself, and you know, lost my job and things like that. So like, podcasts have been essential to my emotional well-being at this point, and Potterotica high among them.
Yes.
So.
Yes. So thank you, podcasts.
Yes.
Out there. We're all fighting the good fight.
Absolutely.
And sharing what we love.
Yes.
With everybody. That's the point.
Absolutely. Yes.
We've also been enjoying, in the last week or two,
yes,
the new Harry Potter Hogwarts Mystery game on our phones. And we've found it to be quite enjoyable for the most part. It certainly has its quirks.
Yes.
The energy crisis,
yes,
we feel is a problem.
Highly annoying.
That we hope that the developers will explore in future updates, because it really should not take a quarter of the energy that I possess to take a break.
Exactly. Or to wonder about something.
I've never wondered that hard.
No, it doesn't take that much energy to wonder.
But otherwise, I mean, I find it quite enjoyable. I mean, it's fun to be a part of the world.
Absolutely.
You know, and kind of in that sort of, at last, I get to explore it on my own. And the sort of choose your own adventure feel is pretty cool. We wish we could choose our friends a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been not terribly pleased with the friends that you are allowed to have at first. And it would be super fun if it were actually like a multiplayer game. I get why it's not. That's huge. But, yeah, it would be nice to, like, be able to hang out with Issa in, that's my kitty Belle. She wanted to say hi, apparently.
Hi, Belle.
She might keep saying hi. She's loud.
Kind of bossy.
Yeah, she's very bossy. She's my old lady.
I would personally like to be friends with the Ravenclaw named Andre, who is currently in my transfiguration class. And who always wears a very flamboyant scarf, because one of the things that he comments during class is that he's going to win points for Gryffindor, and he's going to look fabulous while doing so.
Oh my god, I love Andre.
And I want to be friends with Andre, and the game won't let me. He's the one I want to hang out with here.
I know.
Why can't I explore the corridor with him?
Exactly.
So
Rowan's just pretty lame compared to Andre.
Yeah, not crazy. Although I do personally enjoy the choice of the timing of the story.
Yes.
It's a time frame that we've never really explored in the Potterverse. I mean, we've got the Harry Potter series proper. We've got Fantastic Beasts taking us way back. But we don't see a lot happening during that time right after the first Wizarding War. You know, right after Voldemort is defeated for the first time.
Yeah,
and to be able to explore that time, so if you look ahead, you can see, oh, I'm going to get to hang out with Bill Weasley and Tonks and some of these other characters that we enjoy in the series only when they're young and they're at school. So
I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool choice.
I think if we get anything next, I want it to be Marauders, though.
Oh, for real. Yeah. That would be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely want some Marauders action happening.
Yes, agree. And we're also very excited about the upcoming Harry Potter things. Well, actually, Cursed Child coming to Broadway is not upcoming. It's happening
right
now. It's upcoming for us because we haven't gone there yet.
Right. Maybe in a couple years.
I was saying Christmas.
Oh, that would be awesome. Christmas. That would be awesome.
Yes.
They just got nominated for like a ton of Tonys.
I know.
Which is crazy.
I saw something on there that said that this is like a miracle of theater, which I thought was a little hyperbolic, but
we haven't seen it.
We haven't seen it, so maybe it is. You know, maybe this is like the next Hamilton. But, you know, we're really psyched to see it. And
I really don't think it's the next Hamilton because the dialogue isn't really good. I mean,
and Lin-Manuel Miranda's not in it. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
although if we could combine those two things, I think that would.
Dear God, if he would write.
I think I would die.
A Harry Potter musical, there aren't words. I can't say.
So if you're listening.
Yes.
If you're listening, Lynn,
we really, really want you to do a Harry Potter musical.
Please.
Because I loved Hamilton.
Well, who doesn't love Hamilton?
It's amazing. And I break out in quotes from it like almost every day.
Yes, clearly we quote Harry Potter all the time.
Yes.
We quote this all, you know, this is just meant to be. So please do that for us if you could.
I mean, Hamilton is poetry. Cursed Child is not. We need you to fix it.
I don't think it's that bad.
It's not poetry.
It's not poetry. And I should know.
You are a poet.
But I also, you know, I don't use that as the only standard for goodness. There's also the diggity scale.
Exactly. I think there's just slight diggity with it. I mean, I think the stage show might have
a fair amount of diggity.
the stage show might have a surplus of diggity. I don't know.
This, just in case you're wondering, this is referring to a meme that's been going around that was apparently a question that was asked on, it looks like the, you know, do you want to be a millionaire show?
Yeah.
And the question was, you know, this, the Dr. Dre 90s hit that featured I Like the Way You Work It.
Yes.
And like the four answers were no diggity, a small amount of diggity, a fair amount of diggity, and
a surplus of diggity.
Yes. An extreme surplus of diggity. And that's how I'm just going to measure everything from now on, is how much diggity it
the
has.
The diggity scale.
Yes. We can be like a 0.3 on the diggity scale. We're also excited.
I like the way you work it.
I do.
Yeah.
But see, then he says no diggity, and I'm like, wouldn't it have a lot of diggity if it
What's he say after really that?
I'd like to back it up.
Is it that or bag it up?
I've never been really sure, to be honest.
Okay, we'll look
Are
that up
at
later.
The grocery store? Is he a clerk? Is this a commentary on blue collar jobs?
No, I think it's I mean, you can like, hey, I bagged that chick the other night.
Oh, well.
See? I'd like to bag it up.
I think maybe even bag it up and take it home.
Right? Like she's takeout?
Are they using recyclable bags?
Is it reusable? Or are we going to fill out landfills with this shit, too?
Please, like, come don't on. Use plastic. We're going to bag it up.
I apologize. Okay. All right.
All right.
We're going to look up Dr. Dre later.
Yes. Okay. How do we as 90s women even, for shame, that we don't know.
I mean, that's one of those songs that I am positive about 50% of us have been singing wrong the entire time.
I'm pretty sure. And if there's anyone who's going to be doing that, it's going to be me. So
I'm with you.
Yes. We're excited about the upcoming Fantastic Beasts movie.
Woo!
In November. That's happening.
It's taking place in Paris, which
so
I love.
Cool.
And there's going to be some, we're going to get back to school in that one, too. We're going to go back to Hogwarts.
And Jude Law!
And Jude Law is Dumbledore.
Yes.
That man is fine.
Thank you, Jude Law.
And thank you for the costume director, because those pants are amazing.
Well, she won an Oscar for the first one, so...
And rightfully so.
Yes. Let's shoot for a repeat here.
Yes. Those pants.
You know, I don't think they usually say a justification when you win. Like, you know, the award goes to for this reason, but...
Jude Law's pants. That's what I'm talking about.
Jude Law's pants wins. They're the winners.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So, yes, fun stuff ahead for Potterheads.
Should we actually get into our...
Yes. And now for a
our
deep
actual
moment.
Conversation.
A deep moment. This springs out of conversations that we've been having all along.
Yes. I mean, since we read the books for the first time.
Yeah.
For sure.
And second and third.
And 12th.
Fourth time. Many times.
Yeah.
Yes. So, obviously, our world is in a situation.
Yeah.
We are the Situation Room.
Absolutely.
It's happening.
Yeah.
We should
come out, I think, as rather liberal women.
A bit.
At the beginning of this, just to kind of set the groundwork here. Like... We're not coming at this from a pro-ministry standpoint,
no.
If you will. So,
but in fairness, I don't think J.K. Rowling is either.
Most definitely not. No.
Not if you follow her Twitter feed.
Exactly. I think she's made that abundantly clear,
very,
actually.
Very.
Yeah.
In how, the only way she can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's wonderful.
Yes, it really is. If you're not following her on Twitter, you should follow her on Twitter.
Start now.
She's like the only one I actually follow on Twitter. I've never tweeted anything, ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm not the worst Twitterer.
Oh, no. There are many of us out there. I have an account, never tweeted.
I know, because I follow you.
Yeah.
Now see? I know why you never post anything.
Because I'm just on there to follow J.K. Rowling.
follow me too.
Okay.
Okay.
I actually don't really ever check it, but I might. Maybe I'll start. I get, like, emails that tell me what J.K. Rowling tweeted. It's pretty good. Well,
that is, that would be handy. Yeah. So, yes, we will be honest here in that we do tend to have a anti-ministry leaning and have for some time, which is, but, you know, even beyond that, because honestly, I'd say you might even be more liberal than me.
Yeah.
A bit. I mean, I'm certainly no one's Republican, but.
No, you're not conservative. I would not label you as such at all, but I do think that I'm more liberal than you are. Yes.
Yes. I lean left.
Mm-hmm. I'm laying left.
Yes. You fell down.
I fell down.
You're on the floor.
Exactly.
And I'm trying to help you up. So our premise of this whole podcast is in examining book 5 of the series, which is Order of the Phoenix, and our conclusion after our conversations is that the Order of the Phoenix is happening
now. Yeah.
This is, you know, kind of scarily prophetic.
Yeah.
In a way.
I've actually seen a meme out there on Facebook that was something to the effect of, you know, when I said that I wanted to live in Harry Potter, I didn't mean book 5.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
Didn't mean the Order of the Phoenix needed to be real.
No.
So.
But, you know, in fairness, if I think about it, and we're both kind of history buffs. We both really enjoy history as a subject. And if I had had more time in college, I probably would have tacked that on.
Oh, heck yeah.
To my majors, or at least a minor.
Right.
But if you look at the development of many different governments and societies, this path that they follow towards oppressive government, it's unwavering. It's always the same.
Absolutely.
And that's the disturbing thing. And I'm sure that J.K. Rowling was aware of that.
Yeah.
And incorporated it into the books.
Oh, absolutely. No, for sure. I think that, I mean, obviously, I mean, we've talked about doing an episode on, like, how the books kind of correlate with history in general as well, which we might still do. But, you know, there's, you know, definitely, you know, she pulls from several different times to, I mean, none of her ideas as far as the politics and the government goes are new. Like, those are a pretty tried and true forms of, you know, whatever's going on, you know, forms of oppression, forms of, you know, diplomacy, forms of, you know, democracy, whatever is actually happening. Like, you know, it's what's happened in the magical world has happened in the real world. So, and of course, history repeats itself. So,
yeah. And that's the end of our podcast.
Big sigh.
Thanks for listening.
So, the first kind of parallel that we wanted to draw between Order of the Phoenix and now was the whole, like, fake news, misinformation that is happening now. Like, I know our president likes to talk about fake news all the time, but we actually did have fake news happening and still do have it happening. We've found that it was possibly some Russian people that were doing it, but among others, you know, clearly that wasn't all of them.
Yeah, I've read an article written by someone who really did admit to making fake news.
Yeah, because they thought it was funny.
Yeah, he thought he was being satirical or he wanted to rile people up, but then he sort of realized I've just helped install a fascist regime. Okay.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And was feeling a little bit of seller's remorse.
Yeah.
But yes, there's lots of different sources. And if you're familiar with book 5 with Order of the Phoenix, and even into book 6 as well, and seven, yeah, any of the back half,
yeah,
of the series, you see this, that, you know, the ministry leading heavily on the prophet, the daily prophet, to report stories,
mm-hmm.
Either to not report anything at all on certain events, or mm-hmm. to, you know, report on them in a sensational manner that makes them sound,
mm-hmm.
you know, completely opposite of the actual reality that's going on. Or, you know, as we see with the whole fair and balanced reporting thing,
right,
that fair and balanced reporting is not always what we need.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
there's no sense in looking at both sides of something really horrible.
Right, exactly.
Let's not try to find redeeming things here. Let's...
Exactly. When we're talking about a group of Nazis and a group of protesters, we shouldn't say there's really good people on both sides.
No.
That's not helpful.
No. Yeah. Yeah, that is our challenge as people today in the world. And that's why I frankly would get so frustrated reading this. I mean, it's Harry's frustration. It's the Order's frustration. It's everyone's frustration,
right,
who
yeah.
are protagonists in this series. But the frustration of seeing people believe things that are either skewed or outright untrue.
Yeah.
And believing it fervently, or believing it in absence of other information.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. You know, the people that only get their news from Fox News or from the Daily Prophet, you know, got a very different version of things than, you know, those that actually go to other news sources. And unfortunately, our president seems to only go to Fox News at this point. Mm-hmm. So... And, you know, while he is affecting the news, obviously, you know, Fox News seems to have a direct line to him as well. So they're affecting policy on a very real level, which I think is kind of terrifying, because people that just make up news shouldn't be making policy. That's not...
It's not your job, yo.
It's not their job.
Yeah, and just so you know, too, that in my other life, I teach composition and rhetoric at a university. So I'm teaching young people how to argue effectively and how to research effectively. And it is one of the greatest challenges that I have,
mm-hmm.
to teach them how to research properly. And, you know, there's been several generations of this particular thing that's floated around, and I share it every time I get an update, and I share it with my classes, and it's a wonderful diagram that helps us understand news sources, both from a journalistic quality standpoint and a political bias standpoint. So there's like an axis for each,
mm-hmm.
And you can see this sort of bell curve from left to right, and from poor journalism to really hardcore quality journalism. And I show that to them every year because it's so important to understand that it's not just about, you know, people say, oh, well, I'm reading on both sides of the issue. I'm like, nope, not going to be effective if your two sides are Breitbart and David Avocado Wolf.
Right, exactly.
Those are not effective pieces of journalism.
Those are two poor sources to begin with.
Yeah, so. You stay in the middle of your bell curve all the way to the top.
Yep.
Those are the sources that you want to read. And they will provide you with the information to make good choices. You know, you can't go from one side to the other. And it's always a struggle. Every single year. And, you know, I'd say about once a year, I get one student whose eyes just really light up because I've just taught them something that is like so beyond their their realm of experience, they're like, are you kidding me?
Oh, that's amazing.
Or, you know, because they, you know, they've got, look, I've got this clip that says this. This is the, I remember this from a couple years ago when Barack Obama was still president.
Yeah.
And she's like, Barack Obama's telling people that they should all be on food stamps.
Yeah.
Or SNAP or whatever, the right. SNAP program.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you sure? And she's like, no, I heard it. And I'm like, let's look that up, shall we? And so we found the entire piece.
Yeah.
Which, of course, he's saying nothing of the kind. And her brain looked like it just exploded. She's like, well, why would I only, you know, the thing that I listened to only showed, like, the one sentence. And I'm like, welcome to journalism.
Yeah.
And bad journalism at that. They're not contextualizing. In fact, they're the opposite of contextualizing.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's like, how many times in my life have I been lied to? And I'm like, probably every time you turn on the TV, sweetheart.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, and she put that in her self-evaluation at the end of the semester. She's like, my world has been blown apart.
Oh, my God.
She's like, I've always just taken what I hear and what I read at face value, and I never look into it. And now I question everything. And I'm like, and that, I've done my job.
Well, high five to you. That's fantastic.
You know, I wish I could do that for every single student that comes across my path. And if I get one or two a year, then I'm winning.
Absolutely. Yeah. But,
you know, and a lot of these kids, I call them kids. I mean, they're 18, 19, maybe 20 years old. I have some adult students too, but for the most part, they're young.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of them, they're like, I don't even read news.
Yeah.
You know, I just hear things.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, they're...
It's terrifying.
Yes, you're old enough to vote. You're old enough to read. So,
please.
Yeah.
Please.
Let's get on that.
Read a little bit, at least.
Yeah, and actually, this is a little off topic, but my favorite moment from this past semester was reading... I had them read Civil Disobedience. And, of course, they were like, this is really long and hard.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, yep, I completely agree. I'm not going to say it's not long and hard.
Exactly.
But, A, we need to be able to wrestle with long, hard texts.
Yes.
And, B, do you not see any correlations to what he's saying to today's situation? And then they're like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
And so some guy complaining about taxes, like, 200 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
It sounds like we still have this problem.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yep, we still haven't fixed it.
Oh, weird, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, getting them to see things in a historical context is...
I mean, we're not dumping tea in a harbor anymore, but we've got other means of making news at this point, so...
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And then, of course, we'd like to point out that there are alternatives here that we see in terms of media sources gathering information that grow as a result of this, you know, heavily media influence, you know, ministry influence on the media and vice versa.
Yeah.
You know, we see the Quibbler stand up, which was, you know, formerly a rag that everyone thought was junk.
I mean, it was like the, oh God, what is the name of that terrible one?
Which one?
I just keep thinking about like the one that always has like Bat Boy in it.
Oh, the National Enquirer.
Thank you. Yes. Why they have such an obsession with Bat Boy, I don't know, but. The Quibbler, National Enquirer. That's how I've always thought about them.
Yes. Nobody gave it any credibility. But, you know, they were willing to stand up.
Yeah.
And
believe Harry that Voldemort was back.
And give him a voice.
Yep. Absolutely. It was pretty fantastic.
Because that really highlights, you know, a problem that we have even now.
Yeah.
Is the sense that, yes, we know all this junk is coming our way, but what do we do about it? I mean, how can we change anything?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we own our own newspapers that we can print what we believe in. You know, like it's...
Right. It's, well, not that anyone reads newspapers anymore either.
Well,
so, I mean,
exactly.
I mean, so I think that, you know, I think the modern day equivalent of like the Quibbler or... we were talking about Potter Watch, the radio the wizarding radio show that they were doing once the trio went on their camping trip.
Camping trip. It's a lovely holiday.
Yes. Once they went into hiding. I really think that the kind of media equivalent would now be a lot of the social media sources that are going on now. So, and I think that just as in the Quibbler and Potter Watch, the younger people are really taking the lead in that one. So I am thinking particularly of like the Parkland students and how vocal and amazing they've been on social media. They're really making waves in ways that hasn't been done before.
Yep.
So, and I think that kind of brings us to Dumbledore's Army, which, you know, again, the first thing when we started talking about the DA was the Parkland students. Like, I really think that they're, again, kind of leading the charge in this.
Yeah.
And I think that in general, you know, throughout history, this is not a new thing. Real change does start with the younger generations. Like, I mean, this happened during Vietnam. In general, like, when things are really going to change more dramatically, I think that, you know, it has to start with younger people, because, I mean, we all know that the older we get, the more inflexible we become, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of normal human behavior. I mean, we like what is safe and normal for us and, you know, comfortable. And which is completely understandable. If I were 90 years old, I would want to be comfortable. So
I'm not 90 and I want to be comfortable.
Exactly.
I mean, look at what we're wearing right now.
Right, exactly. I'm in pajamas. So, which is the glory of podcasting.
Yes.
but yeah, I think that, you know, the Parkland students and all of the other young people across the country that have been rising up, I'm really hopeful that we're going to actually see some real changes come about in the future because of them. I really think that they've got some amazing leaders.
So. Yeah, and those and also then the adults who are willing to, you know, be adult enough to give them the space they need.
Yeah.
To explore and try to solve this problem.
Yeah.
You know, the teachers, the parents, the principals of the mm-hmm. students who are doing walkouts, you know, the ones who allow them to do so.
Yes.
You know, without punishment, without consequences.
Yeah.
Who say that they support those actions as opposed to, well, young kids don't know what they're talking about. They're just parroting their, you know, their friends' beliefs, their parents' beliefs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we all agree that when we were in middle school and high school, no, we didn't know everything about the way the world worked, but
we weren't stupid. No, exactly.
We weren't stupid, and we understood that the world was supposed to be a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, we're raised on the idea that we love one another, we treat each other with respect. I mean, that's kindergarten.
Exactly,
that's
yes.
preschool. I mean, that's the stuff that my kids are learning right now.
Yes.
And then we get older and realize that that's not how the world is, but we're young enough to say, but it could be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, most definitely. I think that that's a really good point. Like, we know how we think it should be. We see that it isn't. But, I mean, I don't know if it's naivete or, you know, just having having the energy to deal with it still.
There you go.
I think right that's there. A huge part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be out there at every rally if I didn't have a full-time job, a coaching gig, Cub Scouts, two kids, a marriage, you know, like.
Right.
I would be doing so much more if I didn't have these other responsibilities. So I'm glad that there are others who are able to represent me in that way. And I do what I can.
I mean, that's what before my sister Sherry and I went to the Women's March last year. We went to the one this year as well. But last year, the big one in D.C., we went. And, you know, my mom, before we went, made some sort of comment to me as to, like, it's your turn now. You know, this is your fight to take over. And I was like, well, I feel like it was my turn a long time ago, but thanks for giving over the reins now. But yeah, no, it's, and I agree though. I think that it's, you know, those of us with the time and energy to be able to do these things, you know, it's our responsibility to do that. So yeah. Absolutely. Rise up, young people.
Yes, please. Keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Because then we've seen change. I mean, it's small right now.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
I mean, we were actually just talking earlier, not in relationship to the Harry Potter stuff, but we were talking about how, you know, I see that the Me Too movement has actually made some change, which I, to be perfectly frank, wasn't expecting. I thought it would just kind of pass over or, you know, get made into a joke or, you know, whatever. But I am pleased as punch that people are actually taking note of it. And I really think that, like, some of the, like, public discourse has actually changed. You know, people are more aware of, you know, harassment situations that used to just be looked over because it was just normal. Mm-hmm. That's just what we dealt with as women.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And I think, too, to sort of tie it back, that, you know, clearly J.K. Rowling knows that her characters that she's created, that they have so much more power than some of the adults around them give them credit for.
Yeah.
Even the supportive ones. I mean, even you look at McGonagall and some of the other Order members. I mean, yes, they're wonderful and they thoroughly believe in the cause, but they don't see the young people as being ready or that it's appropriate for them to participate in this resistance. And, you know, I think that comes from a deep place in J.K. Rowling. I think that comes a lot from her own, you know, perspective as being a young person and having so little as a young person and having been in, you know, an unhealthy relationship and having experienced poverty and having experienced, you know, all of these difficulties in her life, and she had to empower herself to move forward for her own sake and for her child's sake and to just believe in this idea that she had.
Yeah.
And that she did literally change the world.
Yeah.
Literally. You know, look at what it's done.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely amazing. The changes in not only the empire that she's built, but, like, that the fans have built. It is such a huge thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, she created something that so many people resonate with. And I think part of it is because of the youthful energy that comes. And that's so attractive to people who started reading it when they were children, or people like us who started when they were a little bit older. And then obviously this guy who's starting now after, you know, everyone else has spoiled it, I'm sure.
Right.
I'm sure he knows the ending.
Yeah.
There's no question here. What's going to happen?
I don't think he knows, like, what happens at the end. I mean, like, oh. I mean, he knows, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what he knows about the ending, to be honest. But, like, I mean, I'm sure that he thinks that, like, everyone, you know, lives happily ever after because that's how books end. But, yeah.
But how happily?
Right, and how?
And how much after?
Because, dear God, it's not what it seems like until, the, like, the last five pages. No. So.
And I'm just thinking to myself that it is a really good thing that we did not attempt this.
I know.
Because, as I recall, you and me and your sister reading the last book
yes.
here in this very room.
Yes.
At, like, 3 a.m, and, like, we get to, like, page 50, and I'm already weeping.
Yes.
Like, I couldn't have read myself through that and tried to talk about my feelings at the same time.
So what he does is he reads it and he takes notes.
Oh, okay.
And then he, like, has a guest on and he discusses it with them. Like, so he discusses
like his a more thoughts. Knowledgeable person.
Who's yeah, read exactly. It? Oh. Someone who's an actual fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I would not want to have a live capture of how any of us looked on that
thing. I know, it was terrible.
Oh my God. And then, of course, you know, I remember, too, that, like, you could tell that, you know, different rates of reading.
Yes.
Because one of us would start to cry, and then the other two would be like, stop! We're not there yet! I'm like, sorry, someone else is dying. I'm not telling you who.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. So kudos to that guy.
Seriously. Yeah, I think he's doing...
Share my feelings.
What is he doing? What book is he doing now? I think he's doing Order of the Phoenix, actually.
Oh. Which was not my favorite book.
No.
It was not. And actually, that was... You should know that I wasn't a huge fan of the movies for quite a while. And
yeah.
I'm still kind of on the fence. I appreciate the back half much more once David Yates took over as a director. which is another conversation. But... because I think he gets it. Like, I think he really got the milieu of those books.
I won't disagree with you, but I do think that movie 3 had the essence.
There, yes. If I had to pick from the front half my favorite, that would be that.
It was just such a... It had the feeling of the book.
It did. It still cut too much for my liking.
They all cut too much for my liking.
I know, but see, actually, though...
With the possible exception of 7, because they split it into 2 movies.
Yes, thank you for that. That was... In the words of my 4-year-old, that a good choice.
Yes.
That a good choice, David Yates.
Yes.
Yes.
Warner Brothers, thank you for wanting to make a lot more money.
Yes. We appreciate your corporate greed. But I feel like in the 5th movie, when I first watched it, I was like, oh, thank God. They've actually pared down all the junk. But I was like,
yeah.
Did she fire her editor? Why is this so long?
I won't disagree with you there.
You know, I thought it was like, finally, they've pared down to the parts that are actually important here.
Yeah.
I love you, J.K. Rowling. It's just the one thing that bothered me.
No, for sure. Is that the book where he's, like, angry the whole time,
too? Yeah, I was upset about that.
I just wanted to punch him in the face.
I mean, I get that you're traumatized.
Well, I mean, it's and so I don't know if there's such angsty, and I just don't have the energy to deal with the teen angst.
Is it teen angst, or is it, like, actual bereavement, though?
It's teen angst, dude.
I mean, he lost his
person. I mean, for sure.
Person.
And, like, you can be sad, and you can be a dick about that, but, like, dude, don't be a dick to your best friends all year long.
It's true. It's true. It was a little much. And is there such a thing as, like, a wizarding psychiatrist?
Hermione is just doing your homework for you all the time. Like,
yes. Would
you just, like, let her and be nice to her, please?
Yes, it's true.
Because she's your best friend ever.
Yes.
And Ron, you know, he's a pal. He's fine.
Yeah.
He's a bro.
Yeah, he's a bro. He's an absolute bro. We don't talk feelings or anything.
He'll play some chess with you.
Yep. Some gobstones.
Some gobstones.
Some exploding snap.
Yes. Some Quidditch, maybe.
Yeah.
You get excited about that. Get him out on a broom. He's happy.
But not helpful.
No.
Not helpful. Anyway. So,
yeah.
To sum up that section, we are in 100% favor of young people taking a leaf out of the book of Dumbledore's Army.
Amen.
And making that happen, and we support you.
Use your voice. Make some noise. That's right. Love it.
Because things will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not always pretty, but things will happen.
Oh, exactly.
All right. our next comparison is, and this is one's quite obvious, is that one of our current administration's major goals, which they started right in on as soon as, you know, the inauguration was over, was to start defining personhood a little bit more.
Yeah.
And
who deserves to be an American?
Yes. That is very problematic for so many people. Mm. And we see that obviously paralleled in the Muggle-born registration, in the having to have blood status to enter Hogwarts. And this is all happening more in Book 7 once there's been a full takeover at the Ministry.
Right.
So it's not really a Book 5 issue, but it starts there.
Yeah.
And, you know, who has the right to own a wand?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have magical ability, if you are a Muggle born, you know, they feel that they have the right to take that from you.
Right.
You know, so there's obviously an intense correlation there between the Dreamers and refugees and others who come here.
Just, you know, Muslims in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Issues there. And, you know, we see the ICE raids and the deportations that are happening to people, and not as promised, not that, you know, oh, we're only going to deal with people who have been criminals. Right. We're only going to deal with people who have been detriments to society. That's not what's happening.
No, not at all.
So, you know, in the books, we see good people called into question.
Yep.
You know, people who have been positive members of the community, people who have families.
Yep.
That they would be forced to leave.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think that's, which is exactly what's happening. I mean, I know that we've seen, we all probably have a local example of, you know, someone that's been deported that didn't really deserve it, with the exception that they were undocumented. And, you know, there's one in particular in Ann Arbor. My cousin was actually the principal at the school that his children attended. I mean, they've aged out of it at this point, but at the time that he was fighting, they were still attending my cousin's school. And, I mean, he was an upstanding citizen, paid his taxes, you know, had a job, had three lovely children, has three lovely children, a wife. I mean, there was nothing but law-abiding about this man. You know, was involved in his children's lives. He was involved at the school, and he was ripped away from them and sent back to a country that he hasn't been to in, you know, since he was a child. So it just seems cruel to me. I, you know, for him and for those kids and his wife, like, it's senseless. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's probably one of the more heartbreaking issues that we've been facing, I think, as a nation.
Yeah.
This idea that people who need our help, or people who, you know, for various reasons, just because they're undocumented, I mean, there's been some situations where there is no path to citizenship that they can follow, and they're being punished for that, you know, when it's not even remotely their fault, and they've been here for decades.
Exactly. This is the only country they've known.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive with the principles that we have set up as a nation as to what we value.
Yep.
And if you look, you know, in the wizarding world, you know, mind you, they don't have a constitution or anything like that, but
not that we
that we know of.
Know of, yeah.
but certainly prior to the Wizarding Wars, there was no qualm about someone being Muggle-born or someone being half-blood or anything like that. Certainly there were snobs, of course, but I mean...
Yeah, exactly.
Snobs happen. Okay.
Well,
yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, so prior to that, it was just if you were born with magical ability, you were welcomed into the wizarding world. You got your letter, you know?
Right.
And I assume that you would have a choice, maybe, if you were muggle-born to pursue that or not, but there was no
I don't know
other qualification.
I mean, I guess that's beyond the point, but yeah.
I thought about this actually. I've given this some thought. Well, it's another podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, there was no other criteria other than can you do magic?
Exactly. Are you magical or not?
And if so, please come and purchase a wand and come to Hogwarts.
Exactly.
You know, or Ilvermorny, or wherever you are.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it definitely, the books definitely call into question who are we as a society and what do we value and how do we show that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I think she makes it pretty clear what she thinks is right in her portrayal of that. I mean, it's very clear that the statue that they have there, the magic is might statue, it's disgusting. And that, you know, I think kind of, you know, would be kind of akin to like a white power statue or something. Like, I mean, which, again, would just be disgusting. So, I honestly think that that's kind of, you know, the argument that we're having, although we tend to not phrase it so bluntly, generally.
Yeah. I mean, and then that issue is arising now, thankfully, arising as people explore, you know, Civil War monuments,
mm-hmm.
Confederate flag displays,
mm-hmm.
Anything else that has us divide ourselves along these very arbitrary lines.
Yeah, exactly.
That's inappropriate. That, you know, that we're assigning value to something that is essentially valueless.
Yeah.
You know, the color of the skin or the religion we practice or the,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything. And you know, it prompts me to consider the areas in our lives where, you know, where we do have those biases, because it's unfair to say that we don't.
Oh, for sure.
We all do. It's a matter of how aware we are of them
and
what we try to do to counteract them, because we know that they're inappropriate.
And how, I mean, to be even more basic, like how willing you are to be aware of them.
Yeah.
You know, and to, you know, be, you know, self-aware enough to know or even, you know, notice when you do have some of these biases. And I know damn well that I've got some that, you know, I don't know until they're, you know, until that comes up, that particular thing. So, you know, I do want to, you know, I want to get better in that. And I want to, you know, not alienate other people in my life.
And, you know, the interesting thing to think about, too, is J.K. Rowling's choice of two of her three main characters, you know, in particular Harry, who is coming to the wizarding world almost in kind of a newborn way. He's not familiar mm-hmm. with the customs, with mm-hmm. the social norms, with the, you know, the culture of any of it. So he doesn't know what to think about anything. He's forming all of his conclusions sort of freshly. So when he meets Hagrid, he sees only a guy that's kind of big, but is otherwise very kind.
Yeah.
And very helpful. And, you know, who cares about Harry in a way that Harry has never experienced before.
Right.
Living with the Dursleys. So, you know, his opinion is Hagrid, good.
Exactly.
As opposed to Hagrid's huge because he's half giants, and giants are vicious, so therefore Hagrid must be dangerous.
Right.
You know, he doesn't have any of those predispositions
mm-hmm.
for those thoughts, so that way we as readers also don't,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a cool correlation.
Absolutely.
We get to know Hagrid enough that by the time we do learn of his parentage,
right,
we wouldn't dream of speaking ill of him.
Right, right.
You know, we're like, well, that's stupid. He's obviously a perfectly great person.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the same with Lupin.
Yeah.
That he's different. But Harry doesn't even know to care about that, you know?
Exactly.
It's peculiar, but it's not bad. But even someone like Ron...
Yeah.
...does have some of those inherent biases...
Yeah.
...that he does quickly get over, but they surface...
Pretty quickly.
In the moment. Yeah, I mean, when he discovers that Lupin is a werewolf, he's like, get away from me, oh my god.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, within... 24 hours, you know,
right.
his tune has changed, and that's right. great. But he has those innate things that come from being raised in the wizarding world.
Right.
Where Harry doesn't have that, Hermione doesn't have that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's an interesting choice, I think, that Rowling made.
No, absolutely.
To let us experience it in such a way that we also are drawing these conclusions yeah. with Harry.
No, absolutely. We're experiencing everything for the first time with him. I mean, I think there are times that he is a really crap narrator.
A little bit, yeah.
but, yeah. but he definitely, you know, you know, putting us in that position with him, I definitely think is a good thing. So that none of us come, you know, with any preconceptions.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so our final correlation that we'd like to make is the educational portion of this program.
Mm-hmm.
And the understanding of the purpose of education at a basic level and how Rowling chooses to represent that and how it's currently playing out in our world.
Yeah, most definitely. So, our current Minister of Education here in the U.S. No, I...
Minister. Ministress.
Yeah. So, our current umbrage is Bessie DeVos. Yeah.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Exactly. Again. I don't...
That's all we have to say.
Exactly.
And I'm from West Michigan.
Oh.
And I can't, like, turn around without seeing something named DeVos or Van Andel.
Right.
So I was very familiar with this woman and her family.
Yeah.
Prior to her ascension to the...
Secretary, is it?
The thing she does.
I think it's the Secretary of Ed.
Yeah. The... Yeah.
What other job she's pretending to do.
Yes. And, you know, being from Michigan, obviously we're both aware of the efforts she's put in here yeah. in our state to...
Dismantle...
Yeah.
Public education.
But the key is, in the name of improvement and choice.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
Yes. Never dismantling it because it's terrible. But... to change it, to reform it
yeah.
into something better, into, you know, having more options for families to
right.
do what they wish.
You know, I will be the first to admit, I think both of us would, that the education system in Michigan, in the U.S., is not infallible.
Nope.
You know, we don't have the best thing going on for our K through 12 schools. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of flaws, but do I think just trashing it and going to something else is the way to go? Absolutely not. I think that is a terrible idea.
Oh, I just thought of something.
What?
Obviously, our correlation here is Dolores Umbridge coming into Hogwarts on behalf of the Ministry to reform and otherwise supervise and interfere at Hogwarts. But it just occurred to me that neither Dolores Umbridge nor Betsy DeVos have backgrounds in education. And yet they've both been given powerful positions to make educational change.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you all, but when I want, you know, a medical procedure done, I would like it done by someone who went to medical school.
Exactly.
For an extended period of time and has done the appropriate continuing education ever since.
Or, I mean, even less than that. If I want, if I need someone to decide what sort of medical procedure I need.
Were you going to say magical procedure?
Yes.
Sometimes I do need that.
Exactly. I sometimes think that medicine is magic, but
and a little bit.
I was saying this to someone just yesterday. Like, transplants.
Seriously.
Are like the closest thing to magic that we get.
It's true.
He had a kidney transplant. Weird, right?
Who did?
The guy I went out with yesterday.
Oh. Wow. I also learned that they don't take the bum kidney out.
No, yeah, they just leave it in there.
Like, that blew my mind. I was like, you leave it?
Yeah.
What?
Doesn't do anything.
They just put another one in there. Yeah. How many kidneys could you get?
I don't know.
How many fit in your abdominal cavity?
You could just keep piling them in there. I don't know.
Well, one dies, you put another one in.
I wonder, with the transplanted ones, if they would leave that in there. Because you do, I mean, they don't last forever.
That's true.
So I don't, but they're not native to your body, so I'm not positive.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, but you're already taking the met anyways.
And that's what's going to keep us up tonight.
Exactly. And that's how we have conversations. Yep. And, all right.
That's how we go. So we were saying, people who know what they're doing are far preferable to people who don't know what they're doing.
Right, right.
I think is the moral of that story.
Absolutely, yes.
I want trained professionals. I want people who have actually been in a classroom to tell me how to run a classroom.
Yeah.
Or at least someone who's administered at a school.
Yes.
Who understands how this works.
Although I would prefer school administrators to have actually been in a classroom.
That also. Yeah, it should be kind of a hierarchy.
Exactly. Like, you know, I really would like the Secretary of Education to have been a teacher.
Mm.
That would be effing amazing.
Yeah. How long has it been since we've had that?
2 years?
At least. Yeah, but Arnie don't know.
What?
The previous one wasn't all that hot either.
Oh. I honestly don't know much about that one because it wasn't Betsy DeVos.
It was less controversial, but less idiotic at times.
Mm, that's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, we've had this go-round. I mean, this has been going on since well before the current era. I mean, since the No Child Left Behind Act, you know, when we started putting more controls, more regulations, more stipulations on schools.
Yeah.
And while I certainly do not argue that there needs to be a level of accountability, I mean, just like with any other job, if you cannot do the job effectively, then you should not be doing it. Agreed.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
However, there have been study after study after study done that show that standardized testing is not an effective measure of student intelligence, student learning, future student success, or teacher effectiveness.
Lord, no.
Zero. They are reflective of nothing other than your ability to take a test.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, developing this No Child Left Behind Act, which sounds like it's going to be, like, a great thing. Like,
right.
'Cause we want all students to be successful.
Exactly.
But you're basing this on a faulty measure. You know, an ineffective system.
Yeah.
That isn't telling you the information that is actually vital.
Yeah.
So, no, you know, this has been
terrible measure.
Problematic for some time. And, of course, it was developed by non-teachers.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, when did we start standardized testing? I mean, this has been decades and decades. eons.
No.
Well, maybe not eons, but...
Well, too long.
Yeah. I mean, it's too been, long. Like, since at least the 50s.
At least. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. You know, ever since we started to be really, you know, scientifically minded and, and, you know, how are we going to measure this and that? And,
right.
You know, we suddenly become very concerned for the children and et cetera. And that's great. I mean, we want to make sure
that we should be concerned for the children, for sure.
But that, again, that's the message. They go into this to education on this guise of we're here to make things better. We're here to make things right. We're here to fix the problems. And, but really what they're doing is insinuating their own personal situation. I mean, Betsy DeVos believes fervently that a good private Christian education is best.
Right.
And, you know, since she can't come out right and make everyone go to a Christian school, her next best choice...
We'll just call it a charter school.
Yeah, her next best choice is a charter school with no oversight.
Right.
And they can do what they want. And...
I mean, we've shown in Michigan, I'm sure other states as well, time and time again, that the charter schools perform very poorly.
Yes.
And the students are failing.
Yes.
And I don't know why we think that it's okay that, you know, students are graduating without being able to read at this point, but I don't think that's acceptable.
Nope.
So.
And I am the one, as a university educator, I'm the one who's reaping the results of this situation. I have students come in who literally struggle to read.
Yeah.
You know,
no, absolutely.
The basic act of it, the basic act of reading comprehension. And then I have to teach them somehow to write effectively? It's, what? No.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, it's really, really frustrating. But we also see, you know, other attempts to control curriculum. You know, there have been multiple lawsuits and things going on, at least in this state that I'm aware of, that, you know, taxpayers shouldn't have to pay for a public university to teach this class about this, you know...
Right.
Morally controversial subject.
Right.
You know, you shouldn't have queer studies, and you shouldn't have, you know, this and that and the other thing. And,
right.
You know, or you look at, you know, some of the issues with textbooks. You know, this revisionist history. I mean, I saw one that was like that the Native Americans gladly moved over to give the new settlers in space in the new world. And I'm like, are you what? They gladly moved over?
Exactly.
Who? What? Oh, my God.
After how many of them died?
Yes, they gladly moved over with guns pointed at their heads.
Exactly.
It just, yeah, that blows my mind.
I know. It's, I mean, it's disgusting. It really is.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I know I'll be honest, I haven't read any of the actual articles that have come out, but, I mean, I've seen all of the... like the titles of the articles, you know, something to the effect that like 90% of, or some astronomical percent of young students today don't know about the Holocaust, which doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. That's a big sigh moment.
Yeah.
Mm.
I feel like we spent like 2 months on that.
Exactly.
In school.
I mean, between it, like, multiple times. That wasn't...
Yeah.
You know, one time we would read, like, Anne Frank's diary and then talk about the Holocaust. One time we would, you know, talk about, like, politics and talk about the Holocaust.
Yeah, it was in every class. And I get that there's been other historical events since then that also need their share of discussion.
Yes.
Totally understand.
Absolutely.
We should probably mention the Vietnam War at some point and
9/11.
I mean, these things need to be talked about.
Oh,
but
my God, I can't believe. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand.
For sure, these kids were born after that.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, my God.
Yep. I'm just going to leave that right there.
Oh.
Yeah, I get it, but at the same time, it's like this was a pivotal point in global history.
Very.
I mean,
it is still a huge thing in the rest of the world. And it should be still a huge thing here. I mean, it was something that we were involved with in one way or another, you know? Like, We fought that war.
Well, and
under protest. Yeah, it took us a bit. But we fought that war.
We did. And we did a good job.
Yeah.
You know, but if you think about it too, it's the same situation. And I think that that in Cursed Child, there's a moment where McGonagall says to, I don't know if she's saying it to this, to like Albus Severus and the other kids, or if she's saying it to Harry and Hermione, maybe a combination. But she just says, you are so young. You are so young and you don't understand how dark it got.
Yeah.
During the Wizarding Wars.
Yeah.
And, you know, it comes down to experience. And the fact that many of our World War, I mean, there may, I don't know how many World War II veterans are left at this point, if any.
There are some.
I mean, very few.
Yeah.
At this point. And
no, they're definitely...
And yeah, as they fade, as their presence fades,
yeah,
you know, I mean, we are of a generation where we would have grandparents who would be familiar with that era,
right?
But well, our children would not.
Yeah,
you know, my older son has good memories of his great grandfather, who was a World War II vet who passed away a couple of years ago.
Wow,
you know, he remembers Grandpa Dean and he loved Grandpa Dean.
Yeah,
but. You know, he was still too young to, like, talk about
the war with him.
Yeah, and to be perfectly frank, Grandpa Dean never really wanted to talk about the war.
Right.
You know, to him.
For sure.
Yeah, he was like, he had a couple funny stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. But he didn't want to talk about the real stuff.
In my experience, that's how most of us have been. So.
I mean, why would you
right.
want to revisit that? But at the same time, don't we have to?
Right.
A little bit.
Exactly.
To have the full breadth. I mean, it's... And it's like the anti-vax movement.
Yeah.
The anti-vax movement exists in part because we are too young to remember an era in which these diseases routinely maimed and killed people.
Right.
And so we take it for granted that our health is the way that it is.
Exactly. So, like, you know, when your kid gets whooping cough, then, you know, it's not as big a deal. But, like, you know, if... the kid down the street gets whooping cough, it might kill them.
Yeah. And so that all comes back to our very first point of information.
Yeah.
The power of information. And that's why the interference in Hogwarts is so significant.
Right.
It's because it's changing the information. It's changing the narrative. Or trying to.
Right.
At any rate. You know, thankfully... Harry is there to make sure that doesn't happen. Harry and everyone else that participated in Dumbledore's army is there to make sure that it doesn't take root. But that also made me think, I've thought about this a couple times, like with, you know, I assume wizards don't have Facebook, but maybe they do. But
I don't know, nowadays.
How, you know, the Voldemort's defeated, the Wizarding War is over. Everyone who was there is obviously jubilant, but what about the people who weren't there? How long does it take to reverse 2 to 3 years of misinformation and all of that? I mean, surely everyone doesn't go like, oh, yay, Harry was right all along.
Yeah, for
Let's
sure.
Let's change everything.
For sure, yeah.
Like, there has to be, like, a period of time where, you know, outside of his circle, he still can't move without suspicion, you know, like, I don't know. It made me think of, like, is it really like this super happy ending and it's all done and he can go about his business now? Like, there has to be a period of time where things are still really awkward.
Yeah. No, I would, absolutely.
And are there people who would still, like, cling to it? Like, no, I know, like, the conspiracy theorists who are like, no, I know it. I know that.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, Harry Potter was really a dark wizard, and that's why we won.
Hell, if Xenophilius Lovegood had been on the other side...
Oh, dang.
He would have been there.
Oh. I don't want to think about that.
So you know that that's a Xenophilius Lovegood type guy on the other side.
Wow.
I mean, the wizarding community is small, but not that small.
Nope.
I mean, that is a good question, though. I'm not sure, because, like, we always hear about, like, after World War II happened, you know, after France was liberated, you know, as Americans, we hear about that a lot, or we have, like, it's not something we talk about daily at this point, I guess, but...
unless you're us.
Exactly. But, you know, like, how was that received in Germany? I don't know. That's not something I've ever heard before. Yeah. That's not a story that's
Did they all just, like, throw up their hands and say, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
It's over.
Right. We don't have to hide the Jews in our cupboards anymore. Like,
right. Yeah, what about the average people who were just trying to live their lives? They weren't soldiers.
Right.
They weren't activists. They weren't Nazis.
But they were inundated with misinformation.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. How did, and I mean, we've, there's, the point's been made several times, the comparison between post-Nazi Germany and post-Civil War America.
Yeah.
And that their society has been one of just abject remorse for what happened. And you can't, you know, throw a stone without hitting some sort of memorial or something that recognizes what happened, takes ownership of what happened, and apologizes for what happened.
And I think, I mean, I know that people of our generation and maybe the generation below us have, you know, still grown up with that remorse, even though their parents weren't born yet.
Right.
You know, but...
It was a part of us.
Right. Exactly. Like, that was something that their grandparents went through, and, you know... And their culture was a part of. So, you know, that was definitely something that, you know, I was surprised to learn that, actually, that, you know, even people our age and younger were still remorseful for that, even though they clearly had nothing to do with it.
Right.
But I do think that that is changing at this point, which may be an unfortunate thing. Although, I don't want Germany to have to, like, pay penance forever.
No, of course not.
The people that are there now were not at fault.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we're nearly fully removed at this point.
Yeah.
From anyone who was involved in that situation.
Right.
But, you know, to think, if Germany...
We still have to teach those lessons.
Yeah, if Germany can do it.
Yeah.
If they can make that so ingrained as a part of their national culture... Why can we not do that with the Civil War? Why can we not do that with slavery?
Yeah.
Why are there people who insist on celebrating the South and insisting that the South will rise again? And, you know...
Who wants that?
Yeah, I don't understand.
I mean, I realize I'm not Southern, but like...
No, but...
What will that accomplish?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Do we really just want white people in power that bad?
Apparently so. And yet they'll say it's not about race. See, that's the thing. We've got some sort of worm in our thought process is scrambling, you know, what we're seeing here. And that's our struggle. That's why information is power.
Yeah.
That's why education has to be free and rigorous.
Exactly.
And...
Because, let's be clear here, the Civil War was about slavery and race.
Yes, it was. Do you know I even read a romance novel that was insisting that it was about culture and industry? It was a freaking romance novel in which a Yankee woman falls in love with a former rebel soldier.
Oh, my God.
And he schools her on what the Civil War was about.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh.
Wait, did I read that one, too?
You might have.
I totally remember that now.
Yes, yes. And it was terrible.
It was.
It had some good, you know, smut scenes in it, but...
For sure.
Other than that, it was like, oh, no. Yeah. I was like, I enjoy a good historical fiction.
Absolutely. I love me some historical romance.
I do not enjoy historical revisionist fiction.
Exactly. Exactly. If you're going to do some historical fiction, Do it right.
And stop calling each other Reb and Yank. Especially Yank. Can we not? So, anyway.
We're, yeah.
So,
I'm not a Yankee.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
And I'm definitely not a Yank.
Yeah, so our question to you all today is, you know, if we can draw parallels between the cast of characters in the Harry Potter series and the cast of characters of our current events, yeah, our life today, who would be the Dumbledore of today? Who, you know, we had a hard time, actually,
yeah,
as we posed this question to ourselves, coming up with someone we felt was the best, and even trying to extend and say, well, maybe it's not a single person, maybe it's a movement,
yeah,
maybe it's an idea, maybe it's a group.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'd like you to ponder what you think, who you, yeah, think that is. Like, who is leading the charge against this nonsense?
Yes.
And who's unafraid to call it nonsense?
Oh, please.
And, you know, maybe the answer is, like, all of us. We can all kind of be a little Dumbledore.
Our own little part of Dumbledore.
Yeah.
We can all do our part.
Yeah. But is there anyone who's, like...
I don't think... See, and that's the thing. I definitely don't think there's one person. Because I feel like we would have been able to figure that out quickly.
Yeah. I mean, there's an obvious Voldemort.
Right.
There's an obvious Bellatrix.
Yeah.
There's an obvious...
There's several Bellatrixes?
There's several. It's gender neutral casting, though.
Exactly, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to identify those. It's easier to identify the villains than the...
Yeah.
Than the good guys in this...
Oh, most definitely.
...story, but...
Which I think doesn't say a whole lot for our cause at this point, mm, unfortunately. I mean, at least we got the DA going on.
We do.
Go on, kids. Rise up.
I do. We do, but who's going to be our Dumbledore? And that does not mean that you have to die.
Oh, God, no.
Please don't.
Please, yeah.
The sacrifice is well intended, but...
Right.
But, of course, if you were going to die anyway because you had a curse on you, then...
True.
If you think you could make it useful, then please do, but...
Right. I mean, if we're going down that route...
Yeah. Who's cursed?
Oh, my. So, I don't even want to answer that question. All right.
That's tough.
Yeah. So, yeah, who's Dumbledore?
Yeah. Comment.
Please.
Let us know.
Please.
Who is our Dumbledore? Feel free to volunteer.
Exactly. We need Dumbledore.
Yep.
Let it
be Jude Law.
Oh, my.
Jude Law, you've been called out. Put on them pants and come
exactly.
over.
Exactly. You just wear those pants on over here. We will follow you anywhere.
Yes.
Appropriate distance behind.
I'm down with Eddie Redmayne, too.
So I can
if
see
he's feeling it.
Your pants.
I don't even need pants on Eddie Redmayne. Just, you know.
Well, to be honest, I don't need them on July
either. Come as you are.
Let's see what you're wearing under those robes.
Maybe they're like Scotsmen.
I think they are.
Dang. I think there's a reference to that, actually.
What?
In Goblet of Fire. In the beginning, when they're going to the World Cup.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says he wants a healthy breeze.
Yes, exactly. No, because all of these wizards are like
trying to get
dressing like crazy people because they can't figure out how to dress like muggles.
Which I'm like, how dense are you?
I know, exactly. It's not that hard. Like, there are more muggles than there are wizards.
Yeah, just
figure
look
it out,
around
dude.
For a sec.
Exactly. What are the men wearing? What are the... And he's like, but she's wearing this.
I bought it in a muggle shop.
Exactly.
For women.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that, you know, he doesn't want gendered clothing. I get
yes,
it.
Yes, it's true.
Like, robes aren't gendered.
No. Nope.
I mean, maybe they are, but, like, They shouldn't be. They're robes.
They are.
So, nice. Good on you, wizards.
Yeah.
Gender-neutral clothes.
Yep. Although I've always really questioned the practicality of the big swooshy sleeves.
No, they're terrible.
I'm like, that would drive me bonkers.
It really did. I wore them for a night, and I didn't like it.
No. Maybe there's a spell for that. Keep your sleeves from...
Keep your sleeves out of your...
Out of everything. Like, how do you dare stir a potion with your sleeves in the way?
Exactly. That's what my problem was. Ugh. How do you go to the bathroom?
Cat.
Or wipe your butt with a...
Well, I bet they have bidets.
True story.
In the wizarding world.
True story.
It's Europe, after all.
It is.
All right.
For a bidet.
So our final thought, which is more uplifting than the thoughts previously provided.
Yes.
Which I think is J.K. Rowling's main point. I think this is just, you know, the bottom line of it all. Is the nonviolent resistance.
Yeah. Well, I think the overarching point of everything that she did is that love conquers all.
Yes.
And so, like, you gotta have love or else nothing's gonna work.
Yep. And you look at those parallels between Voldemort, Snape, even mm-hmm. Dumbledore, in a way,
mm-hmm.
Harry, these boys,
and Neville,
these boys who boys. Well, I mean, there's probably also females, but we haven't really talked about that. But these people who had a start in life that presented them with a choice, and Grindelwald, even,
absolutely,
and Credence. And, you know, these other characters that we're getting to know, is what do you do with that? And what prevents Harry from growing up into Voldemort? Their situations were very, very similar.
Very similar.
To grow up as an orphan in a less than hospitable environment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you choose to be angry at the world? And claim your power over others.
Right.
But Harry was given the opportunity to have love in his life.
Yeah.
He was given the opportunity to make friends.
Yeah.
And Voldemort did too, but he chose not to.
Exactly.
He chose isolation.
Yeah.
And manipulation as opposed to friendship. And
it's our choices.
Yeah. It's our choices in life that make us who we are, not our abilities.
Exactly.
Dumbledore, you're so smart.
You know.
But.
Sage knowledge.
Yeah, he is. He's so smart. So, if you look at Harry never attacks in such a way that would cause fatal harm. Not to anyone.
Exactly.
Not even when his own life is at stake.
Not even when doing so calls him out and draws attention to him.
Yep. He won't do it. He won't, because he recognizes that that's the separation between himself and the people he's trying to fight against.
Yeah.
They're willing to use deadly force.
Yeah.
He's not.
Exactly.
And, I mean, and that's the whole point of the Horcruxes, is that killing splits the soul. Killing is unnatural. And, you know, Harry's soul remains because he doesn't allow that. And even when the urge is there.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants...
Exactly.
...to inflict pain when he's hurting. I mean, he wants to hurt Bellatrix. He wants to hurt...
Yeah.
...the people that have caused him pain and his loved ones pain.
Oh, does he actually try to use...
He tries to use Crucio...
Okay.
...on Bellatrix.
But he doesn't have it behind it.
No, he can't do it.
Yeah.
He can't do it because he doesn't... He doesn't really feel it in the sense that he would enjoy the pain.
Right.
He only feels that way because he's in pain right now, because
he's
lost something.
He's got that pain and anger there.
She calls it righteous anger.
Mm-hmm.
He has righteous anger because he's been wronged.
Mm-hmm.
He's been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the desire that she has to inflict pain
and get pleasure out of it.
Yeah.
You know, that it's a different... Yeah. And that's actually my coworker and I were having that discussion about Umbridge versus Betsy DeVos, actually.
Oh.
We had this conversation last week. And she's not, you know, a rabid Harry Potter fan, but she knows that I am.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I heard that correlation recently. I thought that was interesting and how they're the same. And we both sort of were like, yeah, they're the same, but they're not quite.
No.
Because Betsy DeVos is operating from a place of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to give her the benefit of the doubt that she just can't see the world beyond her nose. Like,
ignorance.
Yeah, it's like, and willful in a way.
Yes.
But...
Most definitely. The information's there.
But Umbridge is acting out of a place of she enjoys hurting people.
Yeah.
She enjoys it. I don't think Betsy DeVos enjoys the idea of hurting someone or purposely disadvantaging someone. I don't think. She doesn't give me that
vibe. We'll give her the benefit of the doubt on that one.
Yeah.
I don't know the woman personally.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but it seems to me that however ill-conceived her ideas are, I don't think if it came down to it, she would hurt somebody, but Umbridge would be more than willing to. It's that mindset that, yes, they might make the same choices, but for different reasons.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that makes us think about, you know, what do Voldemort and Bellatrix and all of their little knot of people, what are they really afraid of? You know, what's driving them? And we obviously know that Voldemort's afraid of death.
Yeah.
And he's afraid of the dead.
Right.
You know, when he sees the shades of people that he's harmed.
Yeah.
There's fear in his eyes.
Yeah. You know. That's the one time that we really see fear in him until the end.
Yeah.
Like, just blatant fear. I mean, we see, you know, I think the things that are reactions from his fear in other times.
Yeah. Yeah, so that sense of... And I think that stems from... This is me getting really psychological, but it stems from that beginning of life where you feel unwanted, worthless.
Yeah.
You know, why didn't Tom Riddle's mother love him enough to live? Why didn't his father want him?
Yeah.
Why, you know, all these questions that he must have had in his mind that he's got to claim that power somehow and he can't figure out how to do it just in himself. Like,
yeah, exactly.
He can't empower himself, so he tries to take it from others.
Yeah.
Because it makes him feel big.
Right, exactly.
So I think, you know, sometimes these people that, and even the ones that are just along for the ride with him because they get a little bit of power out of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? Or they get to sort of enact their sort of sick ideas.
Yeah.
You know, in a socially acceptable way.
Yep.
You know, like the guy that kills animals for the ministry was McNair.
Yes.
You know, that he relishes the idea of killing animals.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, that would not be acceptable otherwise. But under Voldemort's regime, he can do whatever he wants.
It was even before that. But...
Well, yeah. But, you know, he took a job where he could do it in a way that...
Yeah.
That allowed him to. But, I mean, clearly he would have done much more if
he could have
gotten away with it. So, you know, the essence of this, I think, is understanding that love is your power, not your weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I definitely agree with that. And that's generally how I try to live my life, but, you know, it is difficult sometimes because it feels like the other side, you know, because of their grandstanding and, just working from that place of fear, it seems like they do have more power and they can get things done more expediently with fear.
Yeah.
And I don't want the people that I support politically in particular to go that route, but at the same time, I don't know how to get good people in a place of power.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a tough one.
Clearly, you have to have a big battle and destroy historical buildings,
right? I know. I'm like,
and involve some giants.
Burn the whole thing down.
That's what you gotta do. Start over. What you need is Kingsley Shacklebolts.
Amen.
That's what you need.
When we were looking at graves earlier today, there was the Kingsley family, and I was like, I really want
Shacklebolt.
Exactly.
And what a name. Kingsley Shacklebolt.
It's so good.
It's got power in it.
It does, exactly.
But in a good way.
He was cast perfectly, too. I love that man.
Really?
I thought he was great. Like, he had the voice.
I had to get used to him.
Smooth.
I was envisioning more of like an Idris Elba kind of person.
Oh, well, he would have worked amazingly.
Yeah. But, I mean, totally acceptable.
Yeah.
What would happen. But I was like, it wasn't what I had pictured, but I was okay with it.
Idris Elba would have been great.
Oh, my God. I mean, he's great in everything, so.
He is.
Awesome.
Let's just have a moment of silence for Idris Elba.
His pants are amazing also.
Yeah, they are. This is a very thirsty episode.
It really is. We gotta do something about that. Well, that wraps us up for today.
Yes.
Clearly we had a lot to say tonight. But thank you all for listening. Please comment. Let us know who your Dumbledore is. The Dumbledore of today. And make sure you follow.
Or just your Dumbledore. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, yeah. Whose flag are you following?
Yes.
We want to know. So tune in.
I need to think about that, too.
Tune in, hopefully not next year.
Yes.
For
sooner than next year.
Episode 4. Coming somewhat soon.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye.